what you're about to hear is an incoherent mess.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Masked Podcasters. Who are these plastic fantastics coming through the magic of podcasting? My name is Shannon, and as usual, I'm joined here by my brother Jake. Hello, Jake.
Hello, Shane. We finally got there. We finally got around to the monstrosity that is Barbie.
We've been Ford sizzling it only really for us. You and I have been Ford sizzling it at each other.
We need to do Barbie. We need to talk about it. I finally got you to watch it is the main thing.
Yeah, and I don't think I want to see Barbie. And you had seen it pretty much on release, I think.
Yeah, I saw it.
Let's be honest with it. You dressed up. You went to the movies.
I had the Ken outfit. I dyed my hair blonde. I was fully into it. I think I saw Oppenheimer and Barbie within the same week. I'm pretty sure I saw Barbie first. So,
that's the winner of the two films.
Of course. So that's why I went Barbie.
I haven't seen Oppenheimer either.
You're just failing all over today, aren't you?
I haven't. You know what? They both looked as boring as each other. Maybe I was in the minority who went, you know what? I just don't care about Oppenheimer.
I don't have 4 hours of my life to watch Oppenheimer and another Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah, there's a new Fallout TV show that I need to watch.
We'll get there, Shannon. We'll get there. I've already seen some. We'll get there.
Can we just talk about that? Do you want to just do Fallout?
No. We got to talk about Barbie. It needs to be discussed.
I want to spend 2 hours talking about each vault and the lore for every vault.
We'll discuss Fallout maybe after. I've got a few choice things to say.
Okay. I have seen one episode, so let's not go nuts.
The first episode is the one I want to talk about. So
Barbie, what is Barbie about, Jake?
Oh, well, for the second time I've seen Barbie. Barbie is a... where do we start with Barbie? Basically, Barbie is in her dream world, Barbie Land, and she has an existential crisis and decides that she needs to go to the real world to figure out what's going on and how to save the person that's playing with her. She takes Ken. Everything gets messed up. They return to Barbie Land. Ken rules the roost. And Barbie needs to save Barbie Land and herself.
She really discovered her inner Barbie.
Yeah, her inner Barbie. That's the basis of the plot line with many, many layers to this movie.
So in this movie universe, mm-hmm. Barbie is a doll,
mm-hmm.
but she is in a kind of alternate universe where that she's alive, even though she's not being played with, she's being played
with. Barbie Land's a real thing, the real place where all the Barbies exist.
And there can be a portal that allows Barbies and the real world to blend.
Because she started getting played with again, a portal appeared and she went through it really easily and found the real world, and then
she had to take a car and then a boat.
But then she had to find the person who was struggling and having all these thoughts. She had to find her and save her and get back to it. It's just such a deep movie, Shane.
All right. So do you want to talk about it or you just want to get it off your chest? I feel like
I hated this movie with so much passion. And I get what they were going for. I get what they were trying to do. I get what they probably did achieve, but I hated it so much at every fiber of my being. There is some good parts. There's a lot to like about this movie as well. But it's 2 hours. I've seen it twice, and both times, I wanted to be anywhere else but watching that movie.
I really liked it.
I know you did, and I know you would have.
I really liked it. it's too long.
It's 2 hours,
and I'm pretty sure we get and say this in every review that we do of every movie. It's too long. It's probably a half an hour too long.
It's smacking on 2 hours, which isn't a long movie per se, but the story they're telling could have been condensed a lot. There's a lot there that could be cut out.
Let's talk about the things it does really, really well.
Yep.
First of all, they nailed the casting.
Oh.
Particularly of Ken and Barbie.
Perfect. And I loved all the side characters as well. I thought they were really, really well cast. I thought what I was really good about it was that everyone wasn't stunningly beautiful. Ken and Barbie were. Everyone else wasn't quite perfection, which I really, really liked.
There's actually, to be honest with you, Barbie lore is probably not my cup of tea.
You haven't read the comic books? The backstory?
I haven't watched the 900 hours of Barbie TV. But I will say this. When I say I'm not a Barbie lore, I unashamedly grew up playing Barbie Detective, the PC game.
That was a banger. A banging game.
Barbie had to investigate some sort of vague disappearance or crime at a carnival.
Yep.
Yeah. Probably Ken went missing, I think, if I vaguely remember correctly.
But you know what I really liked about that game? Mm. Is that you could type your name in, and if you had a girl's name, it would say your name in the game.
Yeah, and
miraculously,
who did.
You have a girl's name, so it's Shannon.
Yeah.
Hey, and Shannon.
And does she overuse that? Oh, yes,
oh,
she does.
Oh, yeah, she does. She does.
Absolute banger. To the point where, as a 38-year-old man, I have typed it into Google to see if I could find a copy of it to download it to play it again. You can't get it.
It ran on DOS, if I remember, so you can't play it anymore. But
absolute. Yeah, it slaps. If you can get it, there's a call out to anybody who listens to this show who knows how to emulate games.
I will pay you $5.
Please work it out, because I desperately want to play Barbie Detective again. Don't know why she was qualified to be a detective. I think she had a hat and a magnifying glass.
There's an animal that came with her?
I'm pretty sure you've just made that up.
I'm pretty sure. Anyway, back to the movie.
I'd rather talk about Barbie Detective for the next hour and a half, to be honest. But it cast it really well. Explained that there's a number of Barbies and all the Barbies have different skill sets and personalities. The set design
looks like a Barbie
dream house.
It's fantastic. I don't know what Oscars it won or lost, but it should have won something for cinematography, because it is stunning, this movie. It is so perfectly Barbie that You could take any frame from this movie when they're in Barbie Land, and you know exactly what movie you're watching.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. The scenes in Barbie Land look great.
Yeah.
You know, I thought all of that is great. I like Michael Cera as Alan. There's so many Easter eggs in there for Barbies that I know. I vaguely remember our sister playing with. Mm-hmm. I vaguely remember that she had the pregnant Barbie that had a little tiny baby in its tummy.
Yeah, and it pops out and you can make it flat.
It popped, yeah. So it was flat and then you would put a baby inside and then a little plastic cap went on, which was the pregnant stomach. So that that perennially pregnant character that you see, and I can't remember her name in the movie, but she's there a lot. All of the discontinued Barbies, when they go through, when they talk about all the Kens that they had at one stage, which was like...
Sugar Daddy Ken.
Sugar Daddy Ken. All those ones, that magical earring Ken, all of those dolls were real dolls. So they were genuine kind of Easter eggs that have been through. It's, you know what it reminded me of? It's a live action Lego movie.
And that's a very similar
vibe.
That's exactly what they were going for. And I think they kind of hit it on their head.
To the point where Will Ferrell plays the evil. It's the same character.
It is. It's the exact same character.
How is that allowed?
Because he's that good at those kind of roles. He's that good.
They're not even trying.
I mean, I think what they really struggle is when they come. I really like aspects of when they're in the real world, but I think the second half of that, when they're getting chased and arrested and taken to Mattel, that's when the movie really slows down and isn't quite as fun. I think, you know, Ken covering himself is great. I mean, it's fantastic, and he tries to go get jobs. And I understand that, you know, they were all, I'm going to forget the name, Greta Gerwig and Margot didn't get didn't get nominated for Oscars, right? Ryan Gosling did. Ryan Gosling is so good in this movie.
He's got the harder role to play.
For sure. For sure.
To be that kind of... And he's not. It's not even my favorite version of Ken. I go back to the Toy Story... Yeah, Michael Keaton great. Version of Ken is super. That character is super funny, and I don't think it's too far of a jump to say Greta Gerwig saw that version of Ken and thought I can turn this into a full into a full movie. Yeah. I think the problem is it's probably an hour long movie, an idea, or even a half an hour sort of short stretched into a 2 hour movie because. Yeah. The jokes are very one-dimensional, you know. Like there's not a lot of depth here in the comedy. The comedy comes from they're dolls and they're a bit clueless, and that's a one-note joke.
Yeah,
and it's funny, and the concept is funny, and that's it's right. If there was a Dreamland based on Barbie, Barbies would rule that world. And Kens are side characters that only kind of exist to be side characters to Barbie because no boys are playing. Generally, boys aren't playing with Kens. They're an accessory to Barbie played by girls. And again, very stereotypical. I will put it on the record now. Boys can play with Barbies and girls can play with beehives or whatever shit boys do.
What do we do?
I don't know. I stuck shit up my nose and had to go to hospital, Jake. I'm not a good example.
You're not a good example of what kids do. Yeah.
I punched in the face by my brother because we were fighting over a Melway. No. Like this is...
Well, you shouldn't touch the Melways, really.
This is really not a discussion on what we used to do as children. I used to play hours of Barbie Detective. You know, it's very one note, and that one note is funny. And I think, I mean, you could go to broad comedies. I think of like, let's throw in, say, Austin Powers is a very kind of one note-y type movie, but multiple characters have different motivations that do funny. Really, it's Barbie and Ken, and they're kind of the same.
Yeah.
They're doing the same shtick.
Yeah. And it's, I didn't find it funny, is the main. I found it at times moving and very well acted and looks very good, and I understand what they're trying to do, but funny? No.
Yeah,
they went to the fantastical. I mean, and I understand it's a fantastical movie, but they went to the ridiculous, like, you know, turning up to 11 ridiculous on the joke, like the Ken fight scene, which was supposed to be funny, and it was just, like, I was at that point in the movie where I'm just like, this needs to end now. I'm done with this movie. I'm done with the fight. And I'm all for musicals, don't get me wrong. We've done many musicals before. You've seen how much I like La La Land and The Greatest Showman. It's very, very obvious. But
the songs were the worst part. I did not understand the hype of the song. So I was going in there going, this song's going to be a banger when it gets there. Right? I was like, this song is going to slap because of the Oscar buzz. And I haven't seen a second of the Oscars. So I know Ryan Gosling did the Ken song at the Oscars. And I knew that there was a lot of hype. I think, did it win Best Song? Is that one of the Oscars it did win?
Possibly. I don't know. I can try and Google while we talk.
I just didn't think it was very good.
No, I didn't think it was funny either. I thought the song was meant to be funny, and I just found myself bored.
Like, I thought Margot Robbie did a great job. I thought Ryan Gosling did a great job, and I think they were genuinely funny. I thought the side characters weren't overly amusing. They were well acted, but I don't think they were overly amusing. And besides the head of Mattel and that group, you know, being all men, which, you know, is kind of amusing to me that, and the movie makes that point that, you know, we're built by women, but with it's an entirely kind of male run boardroom. Yeah. But to like literally Will Ferrell is playing his Lord business.
Look, role. I really like that part, but then it was like they're all ridiculously stupid, and I just don't find that funny. I never find that kind of humor funny.
I think the real world, I think that's the difference it needed. I think the real world needed to have a level of realness about it.
Mm.
And that then the fantastical part can be in Barbie world. I think you can have kind of, they could steer into evil corporation or, you know, completely oblivious to what females want as a board of people running Mattel, but you've made them kind of idiots. And I'd exactly. like too dumb to function type stuff.
Exactly.
And I think.
And I hate that humor so much.
And I think it's kind of this absurdist. And I think a lot of movies fall into this trap is like random is funny.
Yeah.
Or extreme. There's no nuanced comedy here. It's the stuff in Barbie Land you can accept because they're Barbies and they're Kens and that's their perception of life.
And I love the opening scene. The opening scene is perfect for this movie. She floats down, she has her breakfast, and everything's perfect. She goes to the beach, her shoes stay off, and you know Ken's standing there waiting for her, and he's so excited to see her. And then he does, and then as soon as he hits that wave and flips out, it turns to shit.
But his description of his job is just beach Ken.
Yeah.
You know, all of that is really funny because. Mm. You know, this actually harks back to the way that they market dolls and the way that they, you know, all of that is really meta humor. All the discontinued lines of dolls that are there and Alan's weird and all the stuff that they talk about. The Barbie Land stuff, particularly that first half an hour, is really solid. As soon as it gets to Kate McKinnon, who again is a very one-note actress, Kate McKinnon doing Kate McKinnon stuff, and she's like, I get, like, it makes sense that she's a bit of a warped, she's weird Barbie because you know she's had a haircut and all that stuff, and it's a bit of it answers the question of what some Barbies would have been through. Kids will experiment and shave heads and do that kind of stuff, so it kind of answers that question of, well, that's what you know a Barbie who's been through that would be like. And even the explanation of how to get to, and those jokes have been done before. The how do I get back? Don't kind of worry yourself about it. Going back to Austin Powers, it's like we suggest you don't worry about the time traveling stuff. You know, oh no, I've gone cross-eyed. That whole joke's been done. Those jokes have all been done.
Yeah,
the wink to the audience that's like, yeah, this doesn't make sense, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, like, and I think that's my biggest problem with the movie is everything that I've seen on screen has been done before, and. In my opinion, better.
Except the genuine Barbie Land stuff.
It goes too far though for me. Like when Ken hits that wave and flips out 9,000 times in a row and then lands, and then when he's going to the ambulance, it's fine because like he's like, oh, you know, don't leave me, Barbie. She's like, doesn't give a shit about Ken, so she's walking with him and just kind of saying, you're fine, Ken, you're fine. I really like how they were all trying to get her attention. But the high Barbie stuff went on for so long. So long.
Yeah.
Hi Barbie, hi Ken. It's just like, I get it. I get it.
And look, again, the joke is that they've released a heap of dolls and they're all called Barbie or they're all called Ken. And that's, the concept is there. Like the movie, it needs a really strong editor to cut some of that crap out.
Mm.
And it needed just a bit of, I reckon, another refinement in the script to be like, I reckon we can shave some. The America Ferrera stuff doesn't work. Like that storyline of, you know, she's the mum that's disaffected from the daughter, and so she's sketching random Barbies like cellulite Barbie and stuff. That connection to the Margot Robbie Barbie, stereotypical Barbie, it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's also not funny, and it doesn't necessitate the drive forward. A Barbie coming to life and ending up in the real world is the kernel of the movie.
Mm.
They then had to try and work out how to make that happen.
Yeah, why is she having these crises? Yeah, that's the...
and they desperately wanted the fake out of the daughter. Oh no, it's the mother.
Mm.
And they didn't really stop to think that doesn't make sense.
And who cares? And they're probably, who cares? There's no care there.
Didn't need it. They didn't need it.
Nobody wants to see a middle-aged mum fighting for her relationship with her daughter. They want to see Barbie. And they want to see Barbie Land, and they want to see the problem with that. Like, that's it. I mean, they did a great job of of that speech that she gives about being a female.
Same thing. She gets a really good speech in there.
It's almost the best moment of the film, and like it's a great speech, and it's worth being in the movie. I just don't think. I feel like if Barbie was in the real world maybe slightly longer and learnt that herself without needing someone else to come in and do that.
And I like the Rhea Perlman character who could have delivered that. You know, it's the creator of Barbie. And I freaking love that she's just like, yeah, I had some tax issues and that's a whole other thing entirely. Like, if you go and read up about the creator of Barbie, that's real. And he's quite funny. And that scene where she's just kind of hanging out and there's a conversation about, you know, she recognizes Barbie straight away. All that makes sense. She could have. There was another character that got out, and I can't remember her name. It's like Fisher or
Skipper. Yeah.
She could have delivered that speech. You know, she could have got her back into.
Barbie could have found her and brought her back.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah. That's what I was waiting for that scene to happen because they kept saying, "Well, Skipper got."
They kept saying Skipper. Yeah.
And I'm like, well. And I actually thought the Rhea Perlman character might be Skipper.
Yeah.
You know, and which I was like, oh, well, she's been aging over time because she's been out of Barbie. And as soon as she comes down to the real world, she starts aging.
Yeah.
So I was waiting for the Skipper line through to happen. And that never happens.
Mm.
And so we got this kind of tortured mother-daughter plot that tried to ground it in reality. But then you've got Mattel being run by complete and utter numpties. Mm. But she's very grounded. Like... It went the absurd humor too much.
Yeah.
And if you cut that whole America Ferrara stuff out, America Ferrara, that's her name, isn't it?
America something.
Amy from,
like from Superstore.
Amy from Superstore.
Yeah.
And she's
great. I don't think she's a problem. But I think I almost feel like the real world doesn't need to happen. Like you could go and find Skipper. Maybe she's
it doesn't need to happen.
Land.
No, it needs to happen, but
can't you go to Barbie Land somewhere else? Like go to different Barbie Land or different reality or something?
No, it needs to happen because the Ken line works. Because I think the Ken Thoroughfare stuff works really well. Is that in the real world, and that's the point they're making, in the real world, you know, the patriarchy has been running the world for a very long time and oppressing women. And, you know, we've got to remember that it's not that long ago that women couldn't vote. Like it's a disgrace on society, but that's the way it is. And so the fact that the Kens come to realize that in the real world, he's a white male, he's largely in charge. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and it stands to reason that they would go back and be like, no, we're going to run this place too. Cause that's what happens in the real world.
Yep.
But they kind of get that, even they muddle that up because Ken decides that he's got it's a masculine, manly thing.
Mm.
And so he's like, all of a sudden he's talking about trucks and he's muddled it up. The lesson that you want Ken to learn is men are in charge.
Yeah, not that they
and
need
the
to be macho.
The lesson is men are in charge, but also macho and horses and like, it's that's a muddled message as well.
Yeah.
No one's but suggesting also, that the Kens aren't.
No, but also they come back and the Barbies just instantly accept that's right. Like they're brainwashed because all of a sudden Ken started standing out for themselves. Like the second half of the movie is so muddled that I just can't appreciate it. I do want to say though, like Margot Robbie in the real world when she first gets there and starts crying and has that moment on the bus stop with the old lady, old woman is beautiful. It's a great scene. Like,
yeah,
there is some really good stuff in this.
Yeah, she crushes it. I just think that they probably worked back from set pieces that they wanted, and then they kind of filled the gaps with stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense and doesn't drive it forward. And I just think there's a better story hidden there, you know, that they go to the real world. Ken realizes that the real world is run by men and decides he's going to bring that back and he's going to take over he's going to make that.
Take over, you know, run against President Barbie with actual things that make logical sense, like in his mind that make logical sense, and like get the Kens on board and like fight it that way rather than just going, we're going to come over and brainwash all the Barbies, and now they're instantly our sidekicks now, and they're all the Barbies.
And then there's an equality message, you know.
Yeah.
I think the messaging is right. I think it's absolutely fine to be like, hey, there's a heap of pressure on women to be slim and attractive and, you know, to do it all. And there's a, you know, they've been oppressed for a very long time, and you know, it's starting to, we're starting to write the books, but we've still got a long way to go. And there's a pay gap issue, and there's all the issues that are facing women. And God, in America, it's even worse with abortion rights and a whole raft of stuff. But you know, that messaging is that. I know that people said it was really empowering, but does the movie land that message?
Well, like, I don't know. Apart from the speech, does
it land that message?
No, I don't think it does. I mean, and they try to show it at the end by, you know, going, well, we don't want to go back the way it was, and we need to do, you know, this and this. But it doesn't show that. The idea is there, but by Barbie going back to the real world and becoming a real human, it doesn't show what equality is like in Barbie Land now, because Ken's always been an accessory. I just don't like the messaging. I get what they're going for, and I get why people really enjoy it. But if you're looking at outside of a pretty box, about a pretty picture, and you know, and some good casting and some good set design, I just don't think there's much else there. The message is muddled. The story is muddled. All the other casting is great, but there's no humor from any other character except maybe the other Ken, Shang-Chi. I mean, he's pretty funny.
I think it does enough. Like, what I was baffled at watching it, though, is that I was expecting it to be pitched. I was a bit worried it was going to be pitched wrong. I think it's pitched really well. Like, it knows who its audience is. Its audience is not for 10-year-olds. Its audience is for adults who played with Barbie when they were kids. That's its audience, and it got that messaging right. Like, it landed that punch. It's clearly not for 10-year-olds. It's smarter than that.
Yeah, it's definitely smarter, and it's
pitched older than that, and it's absolutely pitched at the nostalgia, and it's clever enough to at least have a veneer that it's there for them.
But you can also watch it with a 10-year-old, and they'll also get something out of it.
There's kind of enough in it.
Yeah.
It's the reverse of Toy Story. I think that Toy Story is super smart, and there's enough in it for parents, but it's for kids.
This is for adults,
and there's enough in it for children.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. And we love Toy Story because nostalgically we grew up with it.
Yeah.
And we think the jokes are fun, but it's primarily a kids movie with enough for adults.
Exactly.
This is, I think, the reverse. And I think on a surface level, it does what it sets out on the box. And look, we need to talk a bit more about the marketing of this thing, because the marketing was pure genius at the time. You know, it plays the nostalgia that's so hot right now, but it's a meta nostalgia. It's not steering into, look, Barbies are, you know, it's actually, there's enough winks to the audience that says, you're watching a movie here, guys. And we know you're smarter than that, women. So here's a movie for you. But having the boxes at all the movie theaters that people can step, the Barbie boxes that people can step into.
Yeah.
And then the by fortuitous Barbie Oppenheimer rivalry that some marketing genius realized and just, you know, made all the bank in the world because that narrative was almost kind of publicly driven, or, you know, it was driven by the public, but it landed.
Well, it was like, you either want to go watch a boring movie that's about atomic bomb in Oppenheimer, or do you want to see something fun and hilarious in Barbie? Was basically how it was marketed.
Or both. And what they were suggesting is go and do both. And that was like Barbieheimer or whatever. And
you watch the Oppenheimer for the boys, Barbie for the girls, two date nights, you're done.
Yeah. It was just a kind of genius marketing campaign. And every time, you know, I saw the cast being asked about it, they were being asked about Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
You know, like it just seemed to be that it got a life of its own. It's good enough. And I think women deserve better, to be honest. I think they deserve a better movie and a cleaner, clearer messaging about what they're saying. And they went for a broad, you know, men are in charge, but also there's a heap of pressure on women. And you kind of either needed to do one or the other, or you needed to land your punches. I thought, there's a heap of pressure on women. That speech that...
Oh, it was brilliant. Annie
from, she gives a better version. That speech is good. And I think Ken kind of needs to learn something. And I don't know that he gets his full arc. He needs to learn that that's not the way the world should work. Like, exactly. I just feel like his storyline is a bit muddled at the end.
You see all the Barbies coming together and voting for them to be back in charge. But that shouldn't be the message. It should be that we need to work together to do this. Yeah. Not that someone should be in charge and that should be in charge. Well, the right person for the job should be in charge.
It's the equality argument that occasionally we need to give people more scope. And this is where things like, you know, having quotas or what, you know, making sure that there is an equal footing, and stuff like equal pay is the start. But we've been men, and white men particularly, have been getting a leg up because of systemic sexism and racism. And occasionally you need to redress that balance by giving them more. So actually giving them something, or getting them on boards, or you know, there needs to be a conscious effort to redress the balance, rather than just going, right, everyone's equal now. Because that's still not true, because our systems and our processes and society isn't built like that. So occasionally we need, if you've ever seen that cartoon of, you know, kids trying to look through the fence to see the baseball game. I don't know if you've ever seen that comic. And it's like the first one's just like, yeah, that's the level playing field, and the taller kid can see over. Shorter kid can't see it at all, and then there's a kid in the wheelchair that can't see anything. Yeah. And then the next one is just like everyone gets the same box. And it's like, well, now we're equal. Everyone's got the same. But it's like, yeah, but the tall kid can just see really well, and the kid in the wheelchair can't see at all.
Yeah.
Because the box doesn't help. So it's about actually working out what's going to truly make it equal, rather than just go, everyone gets the same. Because that's not equality, right?
I just don't think that messaging was clear.
No, it's muddled.
Yes, it was all for feminism, and even the speech that the daughter gave to Barbie to make her cry was accurate. I mean, what she was saying was true. The marketing, they pushed new ranges to sell more toys.
But that felt so forced, didn't it?
But to 11, like it turned up to 11, and it was. That's what I mean. That's why I didn't love
a mean girl character be like, oh, she's so mean. And she's like got this perfect takedown of corporate America
in her back pocket, ready to go.
Yeah. It was so forced. And I just thought,
she's rehearsing in the mirror and every night, you know,
you can do that. You can have Barbie come to that realization over the course of the movie and be like, the real world actually sucks. And yep. I want to go back to Barbie Land because the real world is really unfair, and this world sucks. Like, this world's got so many issues. I wanted a bit more. To do that, the real world needs to be super real.
Yes,
almost too real. And then the Barbie Land real. Is the juxtaposition. And again, Barbie Land is not good. The way that Barbie Land is currently is not good. It's an idolized version of what good world is.
Yeah.
The real world sucks, but that also sucks because there's no equality the other way.
But
When
she got there the first time, when the men were drooling all over her and, you know, saying that was real. That was not, I mean, I'm not sure it's realistic, but that was where it should have been going. And they got so, and then they stole the clothes and they ran away like idiots. And that's where it started to get silly again. You're just like, you're doing the right thing here. Men are being dicks. They're doing what they want. They smack in her ass and she smacks them back. Be arrested the first time. And then the police officers are gross as well. Like, sure, keep double down on that. But then they go and steal the cowboy hat and the cowboy clothes. And then they go to Mattel. And it just gets sillier and sillier and sillier until, you know, and then she has that great moment with the old creator, and it just, there's good moments packed upon filler.
Yeah,
and
I think I think there's enough good moments to actually say this is the other side of it's better than neutral. I think it pushes it. There's enough in here to go. It's enough to say it's a good enough movie, but there's a brilliant movie in there somewhere. And to me, it joins that level of the Lego movie for me. Like, I went into the Lego movie going, this is going to be garbage. Like, how do you make this a good movie? It either ends up like the animated Ninjago shorts where it's like, it's just a bunch of, you know, Lego people crashing around.
Yeah.
That found a really solid voice. It found a really solid single message. And again, for kids, your message, you want to be your message, one message.
Yep.
If you actually want to appeal to, it's one message executed really well. That gets, that Lego Movie does all that. It's funny enough. There's enough action. It's fast enough. It's fast paced. It's, this is trying to be the Lego Movie. There's enough beats in here to be like, holy shit, this is almost the same movie. But it's just not executed as well.
Well, I think the problem with that is the Lego Movie has so many different characters, again, to draw from. You've got Batman, you have Emmett, you have the Wizard, you have, there's so many, like the Bet Good Cop,
they're
Prisoner all, Business,
they're all,
there's so many good stuff.
They're invented for that movie. Barbie has, there's no backstory, but it's Barbie and Ken, they're good looking people. That's it. That's their backstory.
Yeah, but how good is Barbie and Ken in Toy Story? Like, there's your blueprint. And it just wasn't done correctly.
Yeah, and I thought that's my favorite version of Ken particularly. It could have been executed a lot better. There's enough good stuff in here that makes it watchable.
Oh, I don't know, two hours, Shane, and you're telling me that the scene on the bus stop is good. Her realizing she can cry for the first time is good. The first probably 5 minutes is good.
Oh, I'd say it's longer than the first. It's 10 or 15 minutes. Is really solid.
Soon as Ken hits that wave, it all starts going downhill.
I think it's when Barbie hits the real world that I think it starts to be a little bit.
Oh, but Ken McKinnon's in that first bit as well. I don't know. I'll give the first 15 minutes, well, right? First 15 minutes and maybe 10 minutes of other stuff that's good.
Watching Ryan Gosling and the rest of the Kens do Rob Thomas covers on the beach playing guitar.
That was pretty good, yeah.
And then it pulls back slowly to reveal that one of the Kens is actually playing it on drums. Actually made me laugh out loud. there's really good stuff in here, and I think there's a full commitment for the cast to invest in it. It could have been a better musical, and it could have had better music in it. And I just wonder whether that's some of the missed opportunity. I actually didn't think the music was that good. And so I was kind of going, this song's going to be a banger. Like, I was actually really looking forward to the Ken, because I kind of heard that was a thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Ken song didn't even win the Oscar. Another Barbie song, What Was I Made For, won the Oscar by Billie Eilish, I'm guessing. But I didn't even know what song that was. Like,
not a song I made for in the movie.
And I'm guessing it was like the credits song or something.
But there's a Lizzo song. The Lizzo song over the first couple of, and when it starts to all go wrong for Barbie. So that juxtaposition scene where everything has changed.
Maybe that's the song they're talking about. It was written by Billie Eilish, so I don't know.
But so yeah, so there's the two songs about how sort of great life is.
Yeah,
which I looked at that and I was like, that's their Everything is Awesome song.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think we can talk about the Barbie movie without talking about the Oscars. Now, a lot of people say that they were snubbed, right? So Greta Gerwig, Margot Robbie didn't get a nomination. Ryan Gosling did, which is kind of the point of the Barbie movie, which is what people have said.
Yep.
I mean, looking through the nominations, they were nominated for a lot. It's funny. America Ferrera got a supporting actress role for Barbie. But it was nominated for basically every other category. Except cinematography, which I found really weird. Because I thought it looked brilliant. But like costume design, it was done. Editing, it was there for. And didn't win anything but the original song. It won anything. Only the song, the original song, was the original only one that won. Everything else was... Oppenheimer kind of cleared house. And Poor Things did very, very well as well, which I haven't seen. The question is, Shane, like, I understand that it's an important movie and people really, people resonated with it and found it powerful and meaningful. But is it Oscar worthy? It's a fun movie and very colourful and they're trying to do the right thing. I just can't see... Like I 100% Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig probably should have got a nomination for it. 100%, I think they should have. But to cry foul that they were snubbed and didn't win, I don't think so.
Does that speak to the quality of the pool? Is it Well, was it one of the best movies of last year? It was certainly the one of the most. It's entered the cultural zeitgeist, so it's been well supported. So, is it Oscar worthy? Do we put too much stock on whether it's Oscar, like what's Oscar worthy? The Marvel movies has any of those been nominated? Those things absolutely cleaned up.
Yeah,
like it cleaned up. So I don't rate a movie based on whether it's worthy of Oscars or not. I think it's odd that this movie was nominated for really any Oscars, apart from maybe set, you know, whether the costuming and stuff fits into that.
Look, maybe I don't think it's Best Picture worthy. Like not that
it's
I saw
not Best movie. Picture worthy.
Not. And I mean, is it Best Directed? I don't know. I mean, I saw Oppenheimer, and Oppenheimer is a masterpiece. But like, Oppenheimer is always going to clean up at the Oscars. Those kind of movies are always going to clean up.
They do super well.
I just don't like, and we maybe put too much stock on the Oscars because, you know, it's about enjoying the film and rah rah rah. But I just don't feel like this movie is even in the same category as.
And film. That's why I give it no heed because what's popular and what wins Oscars are not necessarily the same thing. And this was super popular and it resonated with a cohort of audience that, you know, otherwise maybe hasn't felt represented by cinema, and that's important. And we're not the audience again. Like this is
I think we are the audience. I think our age group and our basically men and women in our age bracket are the audience. We're meant to find it funny like Austin dudes. Powers. Yeah, but yeah, I don't think that matters. I'm not sure that matters, Shane. I don't think it matters if we find the same thing funny as I don't find a lot of females going, it was a great movie. You know, I haven't heard very many people say it is a good movie. Like you're probably the first person I've actually heard say that you actually liked it.
I did actually genuinely like it.
I mean, it was fifth best on most polls for best movies of the year, right? You know, it's kind of like it's behind Oppenheimer, Mission Impossible, you know, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, things like Air, John Wick, you know, those kind of things. It's in that ballpark. I just don't think it was Oscar worthy. I just don't think it was worth the hype. I thought it was probably fine, but really, really overrated and overhyped because of the material it was in. And I mean, that's probably an unpopular opinion, but I could not stand. As soon as I started dancing, I was like, I am so done with this movie. I was like you in Justice League. Just so angry. I actually had my hands in the air going, what is happening? I understand the fantastical. I understand that it's meant to be funny, that they're suddenly singing and doing Grease Lightning-esque dancing. But why? What are you doing, movie? What are you trying to tell me? Get to the point and stop.
I was all right with it. I honestly, it's not brilliant. Like it's not. I think it'll disappear quickly for me. It'll leave my mind very quickly. But it was bright enough. It was fun enough. It kind of made enough sense, and it had some good stuff in it that at least kept it watchable for mine. Like I was all right. I was happy to watch it. It certainly, I was expecting an absolute dumpster fire after kind of your initial, you know, I can always tell when you don't like something. It's not anywhere near that bad. For me, it's kind of a B minus. That's where I'd pitch it.
Oh, look, there's part of me that, like, I even talking to someone about it tonight, I was part of me going, you should watch it because I think it's important for people to see that they've made a movie about a doll with no backstory and no real history, about a doll for girls and who was made in the 50s and 60s. It's impressive they made even a movie about it, and it's cast so well. It looks so good when they're in Barbie Land, and the first 15 minutes is slightly funny. I just can't recommend. I can't fathom someone to go sit and watch this weird mashup of a movie. For me, it doesn't land. I'm going to say it's a solid. We say C's the pass.
Yeah.
C minus. It just misses a pass mark.
Well, there you go. So that's Barbie. Would not have ever guessed that it's something that I would give that high score to. So
me either.
I'd be interested
shocked.
To see. your views out there. Let us know, masspodcasters@gmail.com. Let us know what you all think of Barbie. So it's been a while. We tend to do this a little bit more infrequently. I thought we might just maybe give a quick roundup of some of the stuff that we've been looking at.
I want to talk about Fallout, Shane.
I will remind you. I've seen one episode.
I'm okay talking about one episode. I'm okay. I've seen 2.5. I kind of gave up. It's halfway through the third episode. I will go back to it. I will finish it. But the first episode, Shane. Mm-hmm. Now, we're Fallout fans. We've played massive every game since number three. Since number three, we've played every game.
I've gone back and played 1 and 2 as well. Yeah.
Oh, have you? That's dedication right there. I haven't played 1 and 2. I've watched playthroughs and I've actually played it myself.
I took a day off work when Fallout 76 came out and wished I hadn't.
Yes, I've never played Fallout 76 based on your glowing reviews. But I would say we're fans of Fallout, of the franchise.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I did not know what to expect going to this. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really sure. The first episode didn't fill me with confidence. Especially when they made weird, when they had weird things that had nothing to do with the games, like planned weddings. Cousin sex.
Yes. Okay.
It threw me a little bit.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to give a hot take on this if you like.
Yeah.
So, first of all, again, it looks phenomenal.
It is perfect. Perfectly shot, perfectly designed, cast very well.
And then you say, oh, would you like to see Walton Goggins? And I say, yes. Yes, I would like to see him. He is one of my favorites, and I'm very happy he's here.
Yeah.
He's playing a cowboy. Sure. That's fine.
Yep.
The joy, exploration is part of the joy of these games. Mm-hmm. And deep lore building. And I think the reason that I love Fallout so much is that it's got a number of really age-old tricks up its sleeve. One of them being shady, evil corporations,
mm-hmm.
Which talking about the Barbie and what they tried to do with Mattel in that. How Mattel decided that they wanted Barbie to do that, I don't know. Amazing stuff. Well done, Mattel, for letting them be the villains of their own story.
Yeah, their own story. Well done.
But there is a shadiness. So anyone who doesn't know the previous story, like the video game story of Fallout, is that you are always released from a vault, being a vault dweller, and released into the wasteland to sort of find your own feet and discover what civilization is doing at any sort of given time. And so a number of the games are set in different parts of the US, Las Vegas, the Boston sort of Massachusetts area.
Yeah.
California, and that area. If I recall correctly, I think 3's California.
Yeah.
There's a lot of world building, and you'll see that for the TV show as well. But Vault Tech at its heart, and kind of this divergent of the super technologically advanced, but still kind of going through the 60s and 70s. So there's like a real acceleration of kind of technology and robotics and stuff, which is why there's a Mr. Handy that we see in the early stages of the show. But Vault Tech, with the American government, just about all the vaults were done with experiments in mind. So every single one of them, the overseer was given a set of instructions to do something, or the vault was designed to do something.
Yeah.
And part of the joy of exploring is you understand through terminals and through in-game lore, and certainly the way that they're all staged, is that there's lots of exploration of individual things. Some of them are wild and wacky, and some of them are just, we're going to do this particular thing and see if it drives people nuts. One of the vaults, I think, in one of the comic books is just, there is 23 men, 23 women, and one panther. And that's the vault, right?
Yeah.
And some of them are much more insidious and designed to really just destroy people and break them down. So it stands to reason that there will be vaults where they were interconnected, which is effectively what this vault is.
Yeah.
And there's an understanding that this is the way that they would operate. So for me, it was an exploration of a vault ideology that I had never seen before. And I was okay with that. I thought that was fine. The forced marriage stuff I probably could have done without.
Yeah.
But a vault that is thriving and has its all of its plants and material and stuff working really well, and then a vault that's not, is a really interesting dichotomy of how that would be played out. Yeah. I didn't pick that they were raiders early stages.
No, no, did I.
I actually thought that was really well paced. And if that's what you've been born into, and presumably these people, this is the fourth generation of families that have been through the vault. And if that's your vault's rules, you just go along with it. And so you're raised in an environment that says a very virile female is presented and one comes in and that they mate because interbreeding is an issue. So that's how we would manage that. I thought that was an interesting way of setting up the story. Anyone who knows anything about the vaults are far away from each other and are set up in different areas to protect life.
Yeah.
When the bombs fall. So having a series of interconnected vaults doesn't, for video game lore, doesn't make a huge amount of sense. But I thought it worked okay in this one.
Yeah, I just they went for the really big humor and wacky humor early on. Like the cousin, like she threw a throwaway comment about you can only play with your cousin for so long, and I almost had a double take. I'm like, what are we watching? Like.
But it's normalized because if you're in a vault for 400, 300 years or 200 years, there's only a finite number of people, that's going to happen.
To happen. Yeah, and it's just one of those things where I just wasn't prepared for it. And I wasn't like, I'm like, what am I watching here? Like, what are they doing with my beloved franchise? But then as obviously you think about it more and you get along with it. I mean, I think it was perfectly cast. I think she did a really good job working it out. I'm not sure of the tone.
Well, the stuff tone. I've been reading. Well, I think the tone is really good because the Fallout games are very tongue in cheek, and all of the lore that you read is written in such a way. The Brotherhood of Steel stuff I was kind of a bit I can't that would that was never my favorite storyline the Brotherhood of Steel stuff. Again, I've only seen the first episode that the Walton Goggins character, which. There's a character in Fallout 4 whose name escapes me at the moment.
Which is the detective.
Not Nick Valentine. It's the ghoul who wears the cowboy hat. And he's in the second main
town. And he's the mayor. Is the mayor?
Yes, that's right. Mayor? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that's kind of what the Walton Goggins character's playing.
Yeah. I've seen more of it, so I know, but...
That to me is what it strikes me as. It looks like the games have come to life, and I think they've been respectful enough to kind of respect the lore as it sits, but build on it and enhance it. And you know, you kind of expect that from Jonathan Nolan, to be honest. Like, you know, with the world building that he does in things like Westworld. I've always said that Fallout to me is the video game that screams out for adaption to a TV show or a movie, but TV show probably. And a lot of my video games just don't. I'm not sure we're ever going to see a decent Resident Evil.
Oh, well, like they can't do it correctly. So,
and that's what I mean. I just don't think it actually, I don't think it lends itself.
No, there is a Resident Evil movie there that someone needs to make a good version of, and it's just upsetting me.
Most of Resident Evil is for the player, it's puzzle solving. And that never translates to a movie.
No.
It's not, because in the Resident Evil, it's absurd. Like, even when it tries to be more grounded and
tries to explain itself, it doesn't work.
It's nuts. Why do I have to go and get 3 emblems and put them in a door? It doesn't make any sense. Whoever designed this mansion doesn't make sense. You're a bad architect. Like, I think back to Resident Evil 7, where you've got Shadow and you've got a twist.
The right way to open the door.
Why are the bakers doing this? This doesn't make any sense. So that doesn't translate to, you do it because that's video game logic.
Yeah.
And what they've done here, and this is why video games are so hard to translate. You know, it's why it either needs to be animated like the Super Mario movie, and the Super Mario movie is fine. It's not good, but it's fine. It's much better than the Bob Hoskins version. And that's what happens when you try and make a video game out of video game logic. That doesn't make any sense.
Yes.
Particularly the overly cartoon Mario, because all we know about Mario is that he's a dude, he's a plumber from New York who wears overalls, and that's the lore.
But it has the best line in all of movies, Sean.
Are you Mario? Mario, Mario? Who are you? Luigi, no, Luigi? No, Luigi? No, I'm Luigi, Mario.
Mario. It's the best thing in the world.
Even the name of the game doesn't make sense. Why are they the Super Mario Brothers and his first name is Mario? That makes no sense.
Yes.
That makes no sense, Nintendo. Why is the donkey, why is the monkey called Donkey? You're not making any sense, Nintendo. And I need you to make sense. It's 2024. Start making sense, people. And I think that's what Fallout does, because Fallout is, while hugely fantastical elements of mutants and super mutants and, you know, rad roaches, and there's lots of crazy shit in Fallout and ghouls that can talk and ghouls that can't. But it also has some really grounded elements to it, and it's got that exploration thing in it, and it's got the evil corporation that was doing evil shit is infinitely kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting that the factions that would, it's Game of Thrones in a wasteland, because it's there's all these warring factions that have all got different ideologies. That's where I think the games make huge, that's why it appeals to me. And that plus the visual style and the iconography that comes through that is this kind of frozen in the 50s and in the 60s, but being super technologically advanced at the same time.
Yeah.
And so you've got robots and you've got, like, it's kind of nuts.
Robots. Like, super basic of everything. And, like, you know, I really enjoy that.
Industrial and, like, powered by nuclear reactors and all this kind of, but you know, there's all these, and then all the brands that have come out of it and the sugar bombs, and everything's kind of got almost a war element to it as well.
Yeah.
So there's red rockets, and so it's all war-based. So it's kind of like if we were hyper into wars, and that bled into our pop culture references. So everyone was hyper-focused on war, so all of our products were kind of war-based. And I just think that's really interesting and cool. And I love that iconography. It's Mad Men in a video game almost. It's that kind of 60s aesthetic. I love all that. So I thought the TV show in the first episode did a phenomenal job of displaying that and grounding it enough. And it may get wackier as it goes along. I don't know.
I've seen a few things about it, and I mean, I watched 2.5 episodes, and it peaks in the first episode for sure. And I mean, it might get better, but I will finish it. But I thought it was a super interesting take on a video game, and it's one of the better looking adaptations so far that I've seen. I will finish it, but yeah. Maybe
I was so hesitant and nervous to watch it because
it
is something that I love. And I've largely avoided the Resident Evil shows and movies because I just don't think that they're going to be any good. And I have seen the first Resident Evil movie and it is bad.
Oh, don't watch any of the original Resident Evil movies. I mean, they came out with Welcome to Raccoon City, which was decent enough. And they tried very hard to be like the video games. And it just didn't land properly. At least they're trying to make amends for it. But yeah,
it has elements. Like, it's also a shadowy corporation that's doing experiments, whatever the hell they actually are.
Who knows at this point?
But there's not. There's a deep lore, but it's not. Resident Evil, arguably, I don't think is a super good lore. Like, it's not. Yeah, you've got bad guys and they're trying to do bad sort of experiments.
There's so much lore in Resident Evil. There's so much going on in Resident Evil that you can't.
There is, but is it a explorable good lore? Probably not.
Oh, I think if you wanted to strip back some of the sci-fi version of it and put it back to reality, there could be something cool there. I mean, The Walking Dead's ridiculous, but it made it work for 10 seasons.
But The Walking Dead is based on the people element of how you'd survive in an apocalypse, much like Fallout, except Fallout's got heaps of lore in the background as well.
Yeah.
Resident Evil's lore is evil corporation creates a virus that makes people zombies and they're trying to make super soldiers effectively, you know, if I'm summarizing it. And there's a group that tries to stop them. It's not a storied and deep lore.
No.
Whereas I think Fallout's got heaps of lore and each of the factions have different motivations and different reasons for existing. And realistically, I think, you know, while it's not my favorite of the series, New Vegas has some really deep, interesting lore.
Yeah.
And you know, some interesting, and the vaults are fascinating. The fact that people sat around in a room and kind of tossed around what psychological experiments we could put people through, and those vaults. And look, there's millions of YouTube videos of exploring each of the vaults, and what the experiments were. If you don't have 400 hours to crawl through every Fallout game yourself and look at, and read all the terminals, but they're fascinating. And then
it's very unique. So I was going to jump back before you go, Pip-Boy. It's very Cabin in the Woods esque. Where people are watching how people react to certain situations. Every vault is a different version of something horrible.
And the fact that it's continued for years because that's what people have been conditioned to do, even though Vault Tech seemingly doesn't exist in the in 200 years, there's no Vault Tech still monitoring these.
No.
They kind of did set these up with experiments, and then kind of the world got wiped out. And now it's like, but these overseers continue to roll out what they were told to do. Yeah. And so, you know, there's literally 120, I think, vaults. And we've only seen 20 or 30 through the games. And so there's a lot sort of mentioned and talked about, but there are innumerous vaults across America in this world that could be explored with different horrible psychological experiments. Put people through, but at no, you know, and a lot of them could have been solved immediately.
Yeah,
but it's a bit like that. I know the Sanford experiment is bullshit and it's been thoroughly debunked, but it's that idea that the human condition is that we all just follow rules inherently, and we just if we're told to do something, generally we try and do it, and you know, I just think it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating, that the vault stuff, and it talks to human psychology, and that's what I love about it. And the fact that these people are stuck underground after humanity's wiped out, and then they go to the surface, and then they're exploring an area that we all know really well. So I've been to Boston. It was fascinating walking around Fallout 4 and being to those locations that I have been to, and seeing what's left after 200 years in this kind of alternate universe, which is all decaying and But highly technologically advanced as well. So you know, it is the primest video game to movie that I can think of. That I'm fascinated to watch through, and I will definitely get all the way through it and give you a rundown. So having only seen the first episode, I would give it a go, even if you're not a video game fan, and let us know what you think. I stumbled across a movie called The Little Things. Had never heard of this before. Denzel Washington, Rami Malek, Jared Leto. Rami Malek and Denzel playing detectives on the trail of a serial killer. I'm not convinced Rami Malek's a leading man. That's what I'm going to say. He's got too much of a unique look. His cadence, the way he speaks, is far too unique and wacky and weird. I think Rami Malek's an excellent character actor that pops up. I don't know that he can carry the movie.
Well, see, he did great in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, but he's playing a character, and he looks freakishly like.
And he was really good in Mr. Robot. I just don't think he's a leading man in anything else. I agree with you.
Playing kind of what is ostensibly a normal dude.
Yeah.
But not a bad movie. Think Gone Baby Gone somewhere in that area. Yeah. And you kind of get a bit of a play. Just weird that I'd never heard of this movie before. And saw it on Netflix and thought it was all right. It was actually not a bad watch. So.
I think you're gonna find a lot of that stuff. Like, they're just gonna drop random movies, like big budget movies on random things. Like, I watched the new Roadhouse, Ryan Gosling Roadhouse. Why? It was there. I saw it and I'm like, why not? Haven't seen the original, but and I mean, other than Ryan Gosling being absolutely ripped, it was fine, I guess.
I'm convinced this movie exists only because of the Family Guy sketch where he just keeps saying Roadhouse into the camera. Like, he just punches people and then said Roadhouse. I'm pretty sure that's why this exists.
I mean, I'm not sure why they're recreating all these famous movies.
I'm absolutely convinced we are devoid of new ideas. Like, I genuinely think it's just, we're going to get to a point where it's either remakes, it's adaptations of toys or video games.
Or biopics.
Or comics or biopics. Like, we haven't had an original thought. And I think actually the only genre that's still doing original stuff, yes, it's still got its mix of remakes and sequels, but the horror genre is still kicking along.
Mm.
And it's still actually producing decent stuff. I will say a movie now. I got Shudder particularly for these two movies, but Terrifier 1 and Terrifier 2. Well, we're talking about stuff we've seen. Oh boy.
I don't even know what they are, so please enlighten us.
It's a brand new IP, so it's Art the Clown, who is a silent kind of mime, almost Freddy Krueger, who's silent in his mannerisms, but just like gleefully to the point where he is having the best time in the whole world, just mutilating people.
Okay.
And it is a not almost sort of semi-independent. I think the second one may have actually even been Kickstarter funded. But in terms of graphic violence and brutal kills, these movies, gold star.
Gold star.
The first movie has a very horrific kill that is very graphic and very brutal. And they literally, I think they sat around and said, how do we top that? And then the second one, they decided that they had to top it, and they did top it. Let's just say they topped it.
They topped it?
They topped it big time. I think it took something like 3 weeks to shoot that particular scene. But the character design of Art the Clown is just like instantly iconic. It will join the Freddy Kruegers and the Mike Myers and the Jasons, in terms of easily standoutable characters. If you have a strong stomach and like horror, I would get Shudder just to watch Terrifier 1, Terrifier 2, but I do not want angry letters, because I'm giving you the warning now. It is brutal, absolutely brutal. And I want to challenge you to see if you can get through them.
If I can get through them.
You are now a horror fan. I don't think you can
I do like horror. I'm a big, big horror fan. I try my best to stick through horror.
They're not jump scares, really. They are just brutality on its current form and practical effects that you'll kind of go, oh shit, that looks real. So if you just want a brutally graphic horror with no real plot, it's not a strong plot. It's just kind of like set piece after set piece of horrible deaths. That's what I've been watching recently. I think I would encourage all to watch it, especially our teenagers listening. And get a hold of that. Get your parents' credit card, order Shudder, watch Terrifier 1 and Terrifier 2 back to back. And then not sleep for a week.
Not sleep for a week.
Yeah. So that's kind of a roundup. I think, you know, we like to try and share what we've been watching and maybe unearth some little gems for you to uncover. If you found something that you think we should watch, we should clap our eyeballs on, masspodcasters@gmail.com. We love the suggestions. A lot of the movies we watch and review come from suggestions. So if you have something for us, make sure you hit us up on that channel, and we will clap our eyeballs on it and then get annoyed about movies that we've had no part in watching and haven't affected our lives at all, but spend a lot of time thinking about and whinging about, despite the fact that we both have jobs and a life and probably shouldn't care that much about movies. But if we did a 4-minute podcast that went, yeah, it was all right, but who cares? That's not a podcast, is it?
Not really. So, it's just a brief conversation.
So what do you want? What do you want from us? Like, what I'm saying is, like, why would you suggest that? That's a dumb suggestion. So I'm saying, don't suggest that. Allow us to be irrationally angry about a movie that's not impacted our lives at all. That's what I'm saying.
I probably won't watch again and think about it again.
And probably won't even think about it after we switch. Literally, I have listened back to this podcast and not known what I was going to say.
Oh yeah, I watched that movie.
it leaves my brain as soon as we switch this off. I just say, oh, that's enough of that. And that leaves my brain.
So someone was like, "Oh, you did Yellowstone on the podcast."
Yeah, and I was like, "I've never seen that show."
I'm like, "I haven't seen that show." And they're like, "Yeah, you have." And then I went back and I'm like, "Yes, I have actually watched that show."
Interestingly, people have said, "You know, have you watched this series?" And I say, "I think I've seen the very first episode of that and nothing more." Why would you watch the first episode of nothing more? And I say, well, I did it for a podcast and I don't remember watching any more of it. And there is not a single show that we have covered in hardly TV history that I have watched more than one episode of, unless I'd seen it before. I've never, it's literally never convinced me to watch more than one episode.
No, it didn't work the way we hoped, I think.
No, but you know what? If it's not working on the host, I'm sure it's working for somebody.
I'm sure someone's found something at some point.
We will eventually get back to that show, Christian, at some stage.
Yes, we're going to Christian. We're all back.
We can get our shit together enough to do this show, let alone someone else's. So
yeah, exactly.
We'll get back and do it. It's fair to say the public's not clambering for more episodes.
We have had the odd, where have you been? What are you doing?
Nice to see that you're still alive, boys. I think was one of the messages that I got.
Still kicking. Know,
didn't bother to reach out to see if I was still alive. Just only just works out whether podcast. I'm living or diving based on whether there's a new episode of the podcast.
Yeah, I like it.
But thanks for your concern, everyone. Appreciate it. Well, I think that's it for this episode. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to keep doing these. They are a bit sporadic, but you know what? Yeah. You know, we've got stuff to do.
When we find time, we find time, you know?
We're not getting paid for this. This is something we do for you. So stop complaining.
Don't get angry now, Shane. It's too late to be angry.
I'm up and about. Like, it's, you know, irrationally angry is the only gear that I've got. I've either got comatose or irrationally angry. I don't have any other, there's no middle ground for me. I've never felt joy, Jake. This is what I'm saying. I've never experienced the happiness and joy that others talk about. You know. Or I do, and I'm full of shit. Whatever. but anyway, enough from me. Thank you so much for listening. From you.
To be honest, when I found out the patriarchy wasn't just about horses, I lost interest.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Well said.
Thank you.